Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kurup, guten tak, ciao, wi viva, kat bang, half a day, chai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison killitary industrial core poor nation in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the USA, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I'm glad I made it back to the microphone here on time. I was at the dog park with Daisy, and she was having such a good time. And I was in such a lengthy conversation with a woman there, a yogurt-eating vegetarian. Strange word, vegetarian, isn't it, when it applies to those who consume animal products? And I was explaining to her why I am not her comrade. You know, I mean, I had my vegan T-shirt on, and she was all excited, you know, to claim, you know, camaraderie with me. Although, you know, I said to her, I don't really see any difference between her and any other meat eater, really. You know, I mean, what kind of vegetarian are you if you consume animal products, huh? I mean, do you want an award for limiting your oppression to just cows and chickens? And, yeah, so you should get a medal for, I guess maybe pigs benefit from that kind of vegetarian, huh? Why even use that word? I don't really understand. It doesn't really make any sense. The word has been co-opted and hijacked by the dairy and egg industries, who seem to hijack everything in sight, including, you know, what's considered, you know, animal rights movement. Can you believe? I mean, HSUS comes out with this big announcement this week that its partner, Aramark, which is one of the, you know, biggest dealers in animal body parts and secretions, this great agreement where in 5 years, Aramark will use only cage-free eggs. And cage-free eggs are horrific. I mean, it's just, but the words, you know, cage-free sounds good, right? Cage-free, even though the cages then really are like, you know, barns with, you know, tens of thousands of birds crammed together. In many senses, situation is worse than if they were crammed together in a smaller cage, because they're, you know, all the pecking order, and just, it's just awful, really. But we're selling that as the humane standard, and that's the big celebration, is that Aramark in 5 years will be cage free. That word vegetarian is just so strange. I mean, you know, in its pure sense, it really should mean vegan, but you know, co-opting of the language, you know, humane. Humane meat, humane eggs. You just heard on the news just now that there's, you know, business enterprise renting chickens. It's the humane way to have eggs. Did you hear that on the news? Chickens who are de-beaked, all the males are ground alive or suffocated. Horrible hatchery conditions, but that's humane. CABC News this week. McDonald's seems to be in trouble. It's not very happy with its revenues, its sales. It's going to make some announcement this week on improvements to try to increase its business. I mean, it's McDonald's, you know. Yeah. people have a perception that you get unhealthy food at McDonald's. So what's it going to do? But it can always go to another meat industry representative from the Humane Society of the United States, Paul Shapiro, Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the United States, an organization which tells us that God provided animals to humans to be eaten. That is the opinion of the Humane Society of the United States, as shown in an article in the Washington Post. So there goes your vegan campaigning at HSUS, right? I mean, like, do you go against what God has done? Well, that's the thankless job of the diabolical Paul Shapiro. So he was in the ABC News article, what could McDonald's do to fix its business? Well, as you see, HSUS is in the business of fixing animal exploitation business and making it palatable and increasing sales and marketing. HSUS. Quoting Paul Shapiro here, it's so funny. What a job. Vice President of Farm Animal Protection at an organization that's a rancher advocacy group that's run by a pig farmer that puts out coupons for a dollar off packages of bacon. And yet, people remain deluded. I'm very disappointed to see that Baltimore Veg Fest, which was on this program last year, we did interviews and we talked about how detrimental HSUS is to animals. And yet I see there's HSUS accepted as a sponsor again this year at Baltimore Veg Fest, adding more violence to a nonviolent, what should be a nonviolent event, in humane meat. Paul Shapiro says, people are increasingly seeking out vegetarian options, even if they are not converting to strict vegetarians. What is a strict vegetarian to Paul Shapiro? Is it somebody who only eats cheese omelets and glasses of milk and yogurt? Or, I mean, what? So, anyway, that's what Paul Shapiro said. It said Paul Shapiro, spokesperson for the Humane Society of the United States. He said that means it's time McDonald's offers a vegetarian option. Presumably, I guess if McDonald's does have the Egg McMuffin all day long, that would satisfy Paul Shapiro and his egg business. You know, the American Egg Board thanks HSUS and all the other so-called animal advocacy groups who promote Meatless Mondays, because the American public interprets meatless not to mean vegan. It just means replace the dead meat protein with eggs and dairy. So, highest revenues in 30 years for the egg industry, highest per capita egg consumption, and the egg industry thanks Meatless Mondays. And the president of the American Egg Board said that whenever HSUS clients want cage-free eggs, he's there to provide them. So that's a cozy business relationship. And I suppose the American Egg Board will be very happy with what HSUS is producing with Aramark. They both, Aramark, it's like a $15 billion company providing food service to big institutions. And Aramark pledging only cage-free eggs by 2020. That's 5 years until the horrific is replaced with the horrific. But in 4 years, they'll probably say we can't afford it. But again, it's just these words, you know. It's just cage-free. It's just, it's like enriched cages. You know, it's such pleasant-sounding words for such cruelty, such deception. And I guess Aramark, regarding dairy and beef, Says it will work with its suppliers to address issues of pain relief for disbudding and castration, the eventual elimination of tail docking and dehorning. And of course, the word eventual in a case like this means never, as you might expect. It was May Day this week, wasn't it? It has a lot of different applications, I suppose. It's been a holiday, like an ancient holiday forever, May Day. Some regard it as a workers' holiday, and some regard it, you know, almost like it's communist, May Day, you know, red alert. So May Day is also a distress signal, you know, May Day. It is, it's May Day for the animals and for the environment for sure. May Day, like red alert, you know, better red than dead, right? Well, it used to be better dead than red, but, in this case, I guess it's, better red vegan foods than dead red meat, or at least the meat looks red with whatever coloring it might have on it, you know, might be, you know, better, red vegan foods than dead green meat, or white meat for that matter. People think that, oh, I'm accomplishing something by, I only eat white meat instead of red meat. You know, what? The animals are just as dead. You're going to have heart disease and cancer just as much, and you're still destroying the environment. But again, these crazy words, you know, I don't eat red meat. I eat white meat. So you eat white, you know, the animals have been bled out. All the blood has dripped out of them. So they look like white meat, right? Actually, there are good, you know, there are good red foods to help prevent heart disease, you know. So you might want to consider the better red than dead. You know, and some of this I see from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. What? Are we out of... the time seems just out of hand. But all right, we'll continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And yes, it's easy. If you're a vegetarian, so-called vegetarian, make that transition. Go vegan for all the reasons you decided to go vegetarian. A wonderful restaurant in Denver just celebrated a year of making that transition to vegan. We'll talk to Melanie Menard, coming up, executive chef at Watercourse Foods. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And there are also two Bob Linden Facebook pages, who knows why. Usually close to being maxed out, but, you know, you can be my friend. And we were, before the break, talking about, well, May Day, the distress signal. May Day really is May Day for the environment, with climate change and animal agriculture producing at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Of course, it's May Day for the animals who die by the billions. So we look at May Day kind of like as a red alert, you know. I'm looking at it as, you know, better red than dead, though. Better red foods than dead foods. Like if you eat red tomatoes for lycopene, it's a powerful antioxidant. Red beets are rich in betaine and a compound that protects blood vessels from clogging. Red lentils are rich in protein. One cup has 18 grams of protein of red lentils. Kidney beans, one cup provides 44% of daily fiber needs. Red potatoes, one large red potato provides 30% of B6 and 46% of potassium, your daily needs for those. And better red than, you know, red dead meat, one cup of strawberries provides 141% of your daily vitamin C needs. If the question is, what do vegans eat? What do vegans eat? Well, Maccabee sings about it. Maccabee on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Lynn.
Salamata. I tell we I tell on a vegan, we're vegan. I and I eat from the earth and need the animals to give birth. No deaders, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish or dairy, then look for me strangely. Then I realize I eat a very wide variety. Listen to Maccabee. Yo, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish nor no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish nor no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan. When me no eat no meat, no fish, no cheese, nah, no egg. Nothing with no foot, no eye, no wing, nah, no head. Nothing with no lip, no ears, no tongue, nah, no leg. Bread from fruit and vegetables instead. Me careful and me choose about what I'm eating. Me medicine, me food is me medicine. When me tell people that me no eat them, they think. They look at me and scratch them chin and start wondering. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat. Now, how when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat. Now, how when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. You want hear what me eat? Yo, I eat calado, aki, sweet potato, yam, banana, and tomato, cabbage, spinach, avocado, chocho, butter, bean, and cocoa, courgette, millet, plantain, rice and peas and pumpkin, mango, dates and guava, chickpeas and cassava, Brussels sprouts and cauliflower, onion, fennel and cucumber, plum, pear and papaya, aubergine and saya, lime, lentils and quinoa, oatmeal bread and oatmeal flour, watercress and okra, tofu and sweet pepper, couscous and carrot, broccoli and coconut, peaches, apples, apricot, breadfruit, jackfruit, soursop, pistachios, cashews and almonds, walnut, peanut, also pecan, sesame seeds, sunflower, lemon, orange, pineapple and melon, mango, wheat and garlic, kiwi, corn and turnip, pacho and pomegranate, hijiki and rocket, berries, cherries and strawberries, beetroot, grapefruit and celery. You see the meat's not necessary. We tell them say, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish nor no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them say me no eat no fish nor no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them say that I'm a vegan. Hey, look how me big and me say look how me strong. Some people can't believe that me a vegetarian. If you want a healthy body, check the real Rasta man. Cause Rasta man will tell you about the right nutrition. Me get me calcium, me sodium, me get potassium. Me get me zinc, me get me iron and me magnesium. Instead of yam the fish, me yam what the fish yam. Like the kelp and Irish monster growing at the ocean. Me get me proteins and me minerals. Me get me calories, the vitamins A, the B, the C, the D, the E, the F, the G. Essential fatty acid like the omega 3. Me get me fiber and me carbohydrates in my body. Don't forget your water, drink a few glass a day. The toxins in your body, just flush them away. Some of the things you eat, stop in your body and decay. When it come to food, I don't play. We tell them, say, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan. A lot of people would have stopped eating the meat if they had to kill the animal before they could have eat. Look on the way the animal then get treated. Unsanitary conditions.
We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and Bob Linden and Bob Linden also on Facebook. And we are syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com. You can also listen on your phone All you have to do is go to 605-562-7771. That's the listen line. And we have a call-in line, 855-660-4261. I am reminded when I first joined the Genesis Communications Network that I was heralded as the first food show on the network, to which I said, I'm a food show? I didn't realize that. I thought I was about animal liberation and the environment and health. And I guess it does come down to being a food show. And on this here food show, I'm often encouraging those secretion and excretion eating vegetarians to go vegan, you know, for all the reasons that somebody would go vegetarian. So those vegetarians should be the low-hanging fruit into, for becoming vegan. And today we're talking to a wonderful restaurant in Denver that was established in 1998. It's Watercourse Foods, which is now, restaurant has gotten so many awards and so much recognition. Food and Wine magazine, one of the best vegan vegetarian restaurants in the U.S., one of the top 10 vegan restaurants in the U.S. by Culture Trip, one of the nation's best vegan restaurants by Food magazine, consistently ranked right at the top by Westward's Best of Denver issue all the time. And so just this past week, Watercourse Foods celebrated its first year as a completely vegan restaurant. So it's its first vegan anniversary, and we're celebrating it with its executive chef, Melanie Menard, who is with us today. How are you, Melanie?
Good. How are you, Bob?
Great. Thanks for being with us today. So,
absolutely.
So tell us about Watercourse Foods going vegan. What went into that decision a year ago, and how's it working out for you?
Well, so far so good. You know, we're getting a lot of great feedback from the community, especially a lot of support from the vegan community in Denver, which is constantly growing. Pretty much a year ago, we were doing a tasting, you know, revamping the menu, and I believe the owner, while we were bringing dish after dish out, you know, offering ovo-lacto-vegetarian options and then the vegan options, I think the owner realized that the vegan options were absolutely outshining the ovo-lacto-vegetarian options. And at that point, he kind of just dawned on them, you know, it's time to make a change that's better for the environment, better for everybody who eats it, you know, better for the kitchen, better for everybody. And the options were much tastier and more delicious. And I think he realized it was time to, you know, for lack of a better term, just cut the crap. And time to go completely plant-based. So,
great. Well, you know, your words to everybody who's listening's ears. You know, so it's, anybody who's a vegetarian, it's time to cut the crap and just, you know, do it and go vegan. And what brought you to the world of vegan cooking and becoming a vegan chef? How did that happen for you?
Well, let's see, I've been vegetarian about 12 years, and about 6 years ago now, I realized that for me, you know, the dairy was hurting my body. You know, I was allergic, to dairy, and I never liked eggs. And for me, it was like, what more could I do to be a better, you know, person than, you know, go completely plant-based? And at the time I was a cheesemonger actually for Whole Foods at the time. And I really just realized that my passion in life is taking care of the people I love by feeding them amazing food and taking care of the animals I love by making sure that no one harms them. So what better to do than become a vegan chef? And I completely immersed myself in doing cookbooks and cooking classes and running a community dinner, out of Denver called Chomp, working my way up, you know, through the Watercourse Kitchen and, just completely, you know, nose to the grindstone, worked 80-hour weeks, basically doing all these events off-site until I reached where I am now, which I'm so grateful to be an executive chef of a vegan restaurant. So
at such a highly acclaimed restaurant, too. I mean, people are loving it there, right? It's the website is watercoursefoods.com. It's at 837 East 17th Avenue in Denver. So the menu looks absolutely amazing. So, you know, I mean, people who say, oh, you know, what do you vegans eat? Lettuce? You know, I mean, just go to this menu and see, wow, you know. So tell us about some of the favorites that are really popular there, what you have going?
Absolutely. So we have my sous chef and I, Dave Grant, when we approached this last incarnation of the menu, we absolutely tried to make it accessible for omnivores, the overactive vegetarians, just something for everybody. So some of our most popular dishes are like our Southern Plate, which is a country fried cauliflower that has that great crisp and taste of, I guess, what chicken would taste like. It's been a while. But it sells really well. Our Cuban sandwich, which, you know, has shaved Satan and tofu bacon and, you know, for lack of a better term, is very meaty and toothsome. So we tried to, our best sellers are, you know, the most hearty options, very filling dishes, things that people, you know, you don't leave this restaurant hungry and you don't want for meat or cheese because we offer so many amazing substitutes for those things. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why we're doing so well right now.
Yeah. And breakfast is popular. So you have breakfast all day. Huh?
Yes. Breakfast is very popular, especially our pancakes. Actually, our pancake stacks, we do like a berries and cream with a beautiful cashew sweet cream on there. Definitely one of our top sellers for breakfast items. So.
Mm-hmm. And what's your favorite?
I tend to eat our veggie burger the most. We just won Westford Best of Denver veggie burger. Our sous chef invented this amazing veggie burger that has Satan and vegetables and a little bit of beet juice and just all these amazing ingredients. And you definitely, that's very filling. Just one veggie burger, no side. Do a little melted bay on there with some tofu bacon, a little barbecue sauce. It's amazing. It's very filling.
Mm. And so business is good now as a completely vegan restaurant. You know, I do like to encourage vegans to patronize those restaurants who have gone all the way to do the right thing. So, you know, now being a completely vegan restaurant and business is good for you?
It has been. It's been crazy. Our brunch menu, we do a special brunch menu on Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And we have a lot of options you can't get, you know, the rest of the week. We have a Denver omelet. We make a tofu-based omelet, things like that. So it's just crazy on weekends and absolutely picking up and getting busier and busier, which we love. So we're very blessed and lucky to have all this great support from the community. You know, even the non-vegans are coming in here all the time. So,
So the non-vegans are liking it, too.
Absolutely. My dad sent over some of his friends yesterday, for example, and the gentleman had never eaten at a vegan restaurant, was really hesitant, but he ended up ordering, I think, one entree, one appetizer, and two different sides, and ate everything. So
people don't realize that
something for everyone.
Vegans are total foodies. We love to eat, right? So we have to...
Absolutely.
I think
we're more passionate about it than the omnivores because they can go to steak and potatoes, but we're thinking outside the box all the time and coming up with creative stuff to eat and creative stuff to make. And I think it makes us a little bit more well-versed when it comes to food, so...
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, for me, it's whatever ingredients kind of fall over on each other. That's the new vegan recipe. You know, whatever's in there. Look, chocolate broccoli. Look, okay, great. It's terrific.
There you go.
So, in terms of entrees, what are people liking for your entrees there?
The Southern Plate is absolutely killing it. That country fried cauliflower. My favorite one that I put out was the Satan sirloin. So I do a marinated, grilled Satan sirloin steak. We make our own little steak sauce in-house. It comes with a raw kale slaw on the side and steak fries. That one definitely blows minds. Our pasta is very, we have a Monty pasta, tacos. Those are all very popular. So, we have a lot of options, I believe.
Okay. Well, you vegans eat salads, don't you? Isn't that, you know, so you probably have some salads, too, I would imagine.
Definitely. My favorite one that I just rolled out is the panzanella salad. So I do a tempeh sausage crumble, a basil pesto vinaigrette, lots of fresh vegetables topped with our vegan parmesan. And it comes with some little garlic bread crostinis on there. So I love the flavor profile on that one.
Okay. And then, of course, vegans like desserts too, and I'm sure that you have some special ones.
Definitely.
What do you got? What do you got for dessert?
Well, we have our own bakery. Watercourse Bakery has been around for quite some time and provides both our restaurant and City of City with all of our breads and desserts. Right now we have a Boston cream cake, which is so amazing. It's really hard to resist for myself when I'm back in the kitchen and we're cutting into one of those. But it's layers of beautiful, fluffy vanilla cake with this gorgeous frosting between and a nice ganache on top. So that one is just amazing. Our Scout cookies have been around for a long time, kind of our homage to Girl Scouts. And just recently, we started working with Sweet Action Ice Cream, which is an ice cream store that's local to us here in Denver. And they started using our Scout cookies and making a Scout cookie ice cream that's a coconut and tofu base. And it's just to die for. I've been dreaming about it, actually. It's pretty good. So
to live for. It's to live for.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. There you go. Exactly. That's a good vegan way to put it. To live
that's
for.
It's a vegan way to put it. So you do have ice cream and shakes there, too, right?
Yes, we do ice cream. We do shakes. We do sundaes. We have the Scout cookies, our ho-hos, which are kind of like those Hostess cupcakes with the cream inside and the ganache on top. And oh my gosh, I'm getting hungry actually talking about this. So.
Right, and I'm in Northern California, very far away from you. I want you to send me a care package now. It all.
I know, right? We're going to have to work something out.
Definitely. So, yeah, that would be great. And so, did you have some sort of celebration commemorating the first vegan anniversary of the restaurant?
So last Tuesday was our 1 year big anniversary.
We need to take a break. Can you hold on for me 1 second?
Okay.
We'll continue talking to Melanie Menard, executive chef at Watercourse Foods in Denver, 100% vegan restaurant. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and want to thank you for listening. We're talking today to Melanie Menard. She is with Watercourse Foods in Denver. Don't get the impression, Watercourse, oh, you vegans only have water, so what's a 3-course meal? 3 glasses of water? No. I'll have the water course, please. Okay. No, we've discussed the extensive menu, and you've just been recognized for having the best veggie burger in Denver. And what's in your veggie burger or vegan burger? All your food is 100% vegan.
Well, I'll give away my sous chef secrets a little bit here, but we make our own Satan in-house. So we blend a little bit of that with some sautéed onions, sautéed zucchini, lots of spices, a little bit of flour to bind. We add just a little bit of beet juice to give it kind of an interesting color, but it's delicious. You definitely need to try it. There's some walnuts in there as well, so.
Sounds yummy. And so so Watercourse Foods was established in 1998. A year ago, you made the transition to the best possible thing you could do, and the restaurant went 100% vegan, and you just had a celebration this past week, your first vegan anniversary. So what you do to celebrate?
Well, I put out a bunch of little appetizers of some caraway crisp crackers that I like to make, and the cashew Swiss that we make here in-house, and I did a little pickled English cucumbers. We had all these beautiful hors d'oeuvres set out for everybody. We did 2 gorgeous sheet cakes from the bakery, and then the owner, Dan Landis, gave a wonderful speech talking about, you know, his decision to transition to vegan and how he'll never look back, and the positive impact that we've made just in the past year on the community and the environment. So it was just really amazing, wonderful response. Everybody, you know, toasted, raised a glass. We saw lots of friends and beautiful faces that we haven't seen in a while come into the restaurant to give us their support. So it was great. We just had a wonderful little celebration in-house, and everybody got to eat lots of cake, and we were all hopped up on sugar. It was glorious.
Terrific. Okay. Well, it sounds like a wonderful restaurant. I don't make it to Denver that often, so again, maybe if you can stick something in an envelope and, you know, mail it out.
We'll have to. We've tried to freeze our Satan wings and send them out to California before, so maybe we could do something like that for you.
Okay, I'm willing to experiment on humans like myself anytime with great vegan food. So, well, I want to wish you continued success. I think it's great that that you've made the transition, and people are really enjoying your wonderful restaurant. The website is watercoursefoods.com. And was there anything else you wanted to mention while we were here?
No, just thank you so much for your support, and thank you for having us on your show. And we hope to see many of your beautiful listeners in our restaurant sometime soon.
Okay, all of our listeners in Denver, if you haven't been there yet, head on over to 837 East 17th Avenue. Thanks so much for being with us today, Melanie.
Thanks for having us, and you have a great day.
Okay, thanks. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. A restaurant a little closer to me in San Jose is Vegetarian House, which, as far as I know, that's one of the best vegan burgers imaginable also. I just was over there a couple of weeks ago, and it was fantastic, really. So if you're in the Bay Area, don't despair that you're not in Denver. You have a wonderful vegan restaurant called Vegetarian House, which also is 100% vegan. And it does, check out that menu too, the wonderful international cuisine at vegetarianhouse.us. And Vegetarian House does cater. So if you have an event coming up, a business event, work event, if you're getting married, then get off on the right foot. You know, so make all the future in-laws, don't give them something to complain about, like, immediately, right? So make sure the food is great, and it would be if you have Vegetarian House cater your event. Again, that's vegetarianhouse.us at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. And it was great that Vegetarian House was a supporter of the World Vegan Summit and Expo. We thank Vegetarian House for that. And we will continue Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Up next hour, animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. Once again, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We're live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. You can click listen live at goveganradio.com, or you can wait for the archive there. And again, thanks to Melanie Menard for being with us, the executive chef of Watercourse Foods in Denver, which was going along, doing very well financially as a, so-called vegetarian restaurant, and then decided it needed to do the right thing, and a year ago made the transition to become 100% vegan. So if the restaurant can do it, you can do it too, if you're, an animal product consuming vegetarian. Kind of strange. It's really like it's either you're vegan or not vegan. You know, really, that's kind of what it comes down to. And but for whatever reason, you became vegetarian, so-called vegetarian, for the animals, your health, or the environment. Unless you're vegan, you're not really accomplishing your goals. So let's do it. You know, there's a restaurant setting the example. So our thanks for that. I was looking, you know, as I was looking at some of the health material that's posted at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, I find it interesting what happened during oral testimony on the scientific report of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Committee, industry statements versus science at the public meeting. The public meeting for oral testimony on the scientific report of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Committee. Now, industry statements, you know, are, should I say, often deceptive or always deceptive? Let's see. Well, whenever we get meat industry statements from HSUS and Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, and Farm, they're always deceptive, and these people aren't even pretending to be animal advocates, so I guess they can just have at it, right? So what were some of the industry statements that happened there? Well, one was this coming from May Family Farms, cattle ranchers, family farms, so probably, you know, associated with HSUS, which loves those family farms. So the industry statement was, I worry about the families struggling with overweight children. They're the ones who need red meat the most. Sounds like a comedy here. I need a laugh track. Okay, and then the science behind it, and there were responses from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine saying, for example, that overweight people who cut down on meat and cheese lose the most weight. Vegan diets are associated with lower weight, while a large review shows that, these vegan diet is what leads to weight loss, even without exercise or calorie limitations. So, doesn't that seem like the most ridiculous statement you've ever heard? Like, I worry about the families struggling with overweight children. They're the ones who need red meat the most. Ah! Okay, another industry statement. Red meat and processed meats should be a focus to countermeasure disease. Who said that? The American Meat Science Association. Meat science! the real science behind it is that vegan foods have proven most powerful for preventing and in some cases reversing heart disease, diabetes, and forms of cancer, while animal foods have consistently been linked to the development of these chronic diseases. But the American Meat Science Association said red meat and processed meats should be a focus to countermeasure disease. Crazy, huh? Okay, another industry statement. Many Americans are not getting enough protein, so advising people to cut back on their red meat intake can have harmful consequences. And who said that? What wonderful scientist or scientific organization? That's right, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Yes, trust our health to them. The science says, well, most Americans consume double the protein they need. And if we look at what was said in the China study and by T. Colin Campbell, he said, animal protein is the number one carcinogen to which we are most exposed, or the dairy protein. So it's the protein that's causing the disease, and yet the scientific medical doctor coalition known as the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says, don't cut back. You know, you're not getting enough protein. Well, you're getting enough protein to cause cancer, apparently. Another industry statement. Americans don't need more plants, meaning vegan food, I guess, right? I mean, because, I don't know, it would be nice to have a nice philodendron in the living room or, you know, a nice fern. You know. So who said Americans don't need more plants, theoretically meaning vegan food? That was the... someone tied to the American Egg Board. And, you know, the American Egg Board has a close alliance with the Humane Society of the United States and provides cage-free eggs to HSUS customers. But science says nearly 90% of Americans fail to meet recommended daily amounts of vegetables. Nearly 90% of Americans fail to meet recommended daily amounts of vegetables. So apparently, I don't know, Americans may not need more plants, but they certainly need more fruits and vegetables. Another industry statement. Dairy is an important source of calcium, and consumption of dairy is associated with lower risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and obesity. Sounds like a joke, right? I do need a laugh track. Okay, again, just because it's such a bizarre thing to say. Dairy is an important source of calcium, and consumption of dairy is associated with lower risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and obesity. What scientific professional medical organization would say something like that? Yes, it is the International Dairy Foods Association. That's where we're getting our health advice. In front of the USDA, the recommendations coming from the International Dairy Foods Association, when science says that dairy products do not support bone health and may even be linked to an increased risk of bone fractures, and that dairy products are the top source of saturated fat in the American diet, increasing the risk for both cardiovascular disease and insulin resistance, which leads to diabetes. That's the science. The International Dairy Foods Association doesn't agree. Industry statement. Lean meats, which can include red meat and processed meats, are nutrient-dense proteins that are necessary for a healthy life. And from whom would we receive such a knowledgeable scientific medical statement? That coming from the North American Meat Institute, where science says people who consume the most red and processed meat products face an increased risk of colon cancer, diabetes, and early death. On the other hand, people who avoid meat increase their longevity. Science and the meat and dairy and egg industries are not agreeing very much with their statements in front of the USDA. Whom do we believe? An industry statement again says seafood contributes to a healthy heart, brain, and weight. Well, who would give us that advice? Well, of course, the National Fisheries Institute would say that seafood contributes to a healthy heart, brain, and weight. But science says fish and shellfish are high in fat, cholesterol, and pollutants. Let us remember that fish carry heavy metals, generally in their fat. So maybe good if you want to increase the mercury in your diet. Okay, let's see here. Another industry statement. The nutrient package of dairy foods is virtually irreplaceable in the diet. The dietary guidelines should recommend that people increase their consumption of dairy foods. Who would say something like that? Well, the National Milk Producers Federation would say that to the USDA. I wonder if anybody at the USDA said, you know, like, what are your credentials for saying this, other than you would like increased profits? So, okay, the nutrient package of dietary foods is virtually irreplaceable. The nutrient package of dairy foods is virtually irreplaceable in the diet. So says the National Milk Producers Federation, when science says leafy greens contain calcium. The sun provides vitamin D. Magnesium is found in grains and tomato products. Tomato products are an optimal source of potassium. Dairy products have been linked to diabetes, certain types of cancer, bone fractures, the development of acne, and even an increased risk of death. So industry seems to be willing to gamble with your premature death for the sake of profits, and is willing to lie like a humane society of the United States. Another industry statement. There is no evidence supporting that a switch to plant-based patterns, probably meaning, you know, like eating vegan food, would be more sustainable. The pork industry can demonstrate the sustainability of the product. And who would say that, you know, producing pork is sustainable? Well, of course, it would be the pork producers at Heartland Marketing Group. They are pork producers. Let's see. I'll just give you the one science response to that after the break, when we continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. You can find the donate button there and support us with a tax-deductible donation. We would greatly appreciate that. And we will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And if you'd like to become a sponsor of the program, let me know. You can email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. What are we on the air now? Is it like 14 years? Inexplicably, from we started in 2001. And we thought we'd be on the air for, you know, a couple of weeks until ownership, management, all heard what the show was, what we were saying. And, you know, so apparently ownership and management haven't listened yet, luckily. And we continue on a weekly basis, now a two-hour program every week. We were talking about statements made during the comment period to the USDA on dietary guidelines and... you know, what industry says seems to be very different from what science says. And just before the break, well, we were going over a number of industry statements and how science would address those statements. We had just one left, which was the industry statement made to the USDA, which was there's no evidence supporting that a switch to plant-based patterns would be more sustainable. I guess plant-based patterns would mean, you know, populations who eat vegan food. And it says the pork industry can demonstrate the sustainability of the product, and that non-scientific statement from Heartland Marketing Group, which is pork producers, much like well, the vice president of the Humane Society of the United States, Joe Maxwell, whose organization has been offering a $1 off coupon on Applegate bacon, saying that breakfast just got tastier. That's your animal advocacy organization at work. But I digress, because the response by science that so-called pork production is sustainable is that pork production is a far more inefficient use of resources and a greater contributor to environmental damage compared with the production of vegan foods for human consumption. Some estimates show that the meat and dairy industries are responsible for, well, I mean, if we want to talk about greenhouse gas emissions, it's at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions caused by animal agriculture. At least 51%. Now, elsewhere, you might see figures that say 18%, and then the same organization that once said 18% said, whoa, that even 18%, which is way more than all transportation combined, well, 18% still sounds too high, so let's lower that from 18% to 14.5%, to 14.5%. So you've heard those figures, and those figures related to the environment come from meat industry environmentalists, not scientists. They're not even environmentalists. Why would I say that? You know, the same meat industry that was just making these statements in front of the USDA that doesn't care about your health or how long you live, doesn't care about planetary health or how long you live, whether you go extinct or, you know, whatever, climate change ravages the planet, as long as they have money in their pockets, they're happy. So that 14.5% is a lie. It comes from the meat industry. Meat industry propagandists. The at least 51% number comes from environmental specialists at the World Bank, who are not selling you anything other than these are the calculations made by their scientific approach to the matter. So there you have it. Whom do you trust? Whom will you believe? The industry? And the industry, you know, what can I say? The industry includes animal advocacy organizations at this point. HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary, Compassion Over Killing, Farm, etc. So we will continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and we'll have commentary coming up with Professor Gary Francione, and on Twitter, we're at GoVeganRadio. Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, on Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. And thanks for support of the program from Nature's Flavors. Nature's Flavors is offering free shipping on orders $25 and up for Mother's Day. So check out the thousands of products at Nature'sFlavors.com. All of them are vegan. You can check out, look, the banana cake mix, the apple cake mix, also the largest selection of organic essential oils at Nature's Flavors. Shop on the website, and again, for Mother's Day, free shipping on orders $25 and up. Go to naturesflavors.com, and we thank Nature's Flavors for its support of the program and the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And now it is time for animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. And the latest book with Anna Charlton is Eat Like You Care. And we missed you last week. How are you, Professor Francione?
I'm just dandy, Bob. How are you?
Fine, fine. Yeah, doing all right.
You know, Anna and I are working on a new book, and I think we're going to have it done, I'm hoping, in the next month. It's called The Abolitionist Approach to Animal Rights, and Sue Coe has agreed to do the illustrations for us.
Wow.
And so we're looking forward to getting that out, and there's sort of a short explanation of what the abolitionist approach is, and how it, you know, with the basic principles of the abolitionist approach. But tonight I wanted to talk about actually one of the things that we talk about in the book. We have a whole section devoted to this. What sentience is, and the importance, the moral importance of sentience, because a lot of people are really confused about what that means, and what it means and how it functions in terms of a moral theory. First, let's talk about what sentience, sentience is. Sentience is subjective awareness. It's the fact that there is someone there who is perceiving and is is having experiences. So any being who is subjectively aware, perceptually aware, is sentient. And it doesn't, you know, we oftentimes think that sentience means cognition or mental capabilities, which are similar to those of humans. And the answer is no, it doesn't. Any being who is subjectively aware is a sentient being. Okay, so that means basically any being that can experience pain or pleasure or in any way sort of really is a subjectively aware being. You know, it doesn't really require very much sophistication. And what's really important is the role this plays in moral theory, because I think this is really a point where there's a lot of confusion. A lot of animal people think that sentience is morally important, but it doesn't translate into saying that a being who is sentient has a moral right not to be used as a resource at all. This is a very welfarist idea. It goes back a couple hundred years, but its current proponent is, of course, Peter Singer. Peter Singer maintains that sentience is morally relevant. Peter Singer maintains that if a being is sentient, that being has interests, that is, the being has preferences, desires, or wants, and that those preferences, desires, or wants have to be taken into consideration in deciding what is morally right or wrong to do in a particular situation. But where I depart from Singer and where I depart from welfarists generally is Peter maintains that merely being sentient does not translate into having an interest in continuing to live. That is, I may be a sentient being, but because I don't have a particular level of cognitive sophistication, and I'm not capable of having plans for the future, or I don't really have a sense of self-awareness, then although I may be sentient, I don't have that level of cognitive functioning that entitles me to the sort of moral consideration that at least provides a presumption against my being used as a resource. So what Singer's saying is if a being is sentient, we've got to be concerned about the treatment of that being. But if the being is merely sentient, we don't have to be concerned about the use of the being. We can use and kill that being as long as we pay attention to the interest that that being has in not suffering and in not being treated badly while she or he is alive and not being slaughtered in a particularly painful manner. And so I think this is a real, real problem. It's a real level of confusion because I frequently, you know, people will say to me, well, you know, you think sentience is important and Singer thinks sentience is important. Yes, that's true. We both think sentience is important, but it plays a very, very different role for us. For him, it merely means that the interests that a being has to be weighed in terms of deciding what level or what sort of treatment is morally acceptable. But Peter very clearly says that the fact that a being is sentient does not mean that that being has an interest in continuing to live. And if the being doesn't have an interest in continuing to live, then there's no problem with killing the being. The only question is whether you do it in a painful or painless way, relatively painless or relatively painful way. And so this is something I think that has really infected the movement. This is why, for example, I think PETA has no problem with taking in, you know, animals at its Norfolk facility and killing 95% of them. I'm sure that PETA does that in a as quote humane end quote a way as they can do it. I'm sure that they do it better than most shelters do it. But it's wrong. In my judgment, it's wrong. They should not be doing that. They should not be doing that because those dogs and cats, even though they may not have the same sorts of minds that we have, they have an interest in continuing to live by virtue of being sentient. And, you know, I mean, to me, when someone says, well, a being can be sentient but not have an interest in continuing to live, it's like saying a being may have eyes but may not have an interest in continuing to see. That's crazy. If a being is sentient, the being has an interest in continuing to live, because sentience is only a means to the end of continued existence. That is, sentience is a characteristic that certain beings have that allows them to continue to survive by going towards things that they find pleasant and going away from things that they find obnoxious, noxious, or harmful. So I think that there's a real, you know, there's a very important issue here, and I see this with animal people all the time. This is why, as I say, this is how PETA justifies killing animals. More importantly, it's how welfarists justify saying, well, you know, we've got to take baby steps, and oh, isn't it great that this corporation or that corporation is agreeing to buy cage-free eggs? Because they're just focusing on the treatment, and they're saying, these are sentient beings, we have to be concerned about treatment, and we're reducing suffering, and that's really all it's about. No, these beings are sentient. We should not be exploiting them at all. In the same way that we should, you know, yes, it's better to inflict less harm than more harm on humans, but we should not be using humans as slaves, as forced organ donors, as non-consenting subjects of biomedical experiments. And it's not really a question of treatment. It's a question of we shouldn't be using them at all in that way. And so what I'm really concerned about is this idea that there's a lot of confusion about what sentience means. I mean, also, this is where you get people saying, you know, well, what about plants? Aren't plants sentient? The answer is, the short answer is no, they are not sentient. They are alive. They may react to stimuli. They do react to stimuli. But there is no sort of intentionality there. There's no mind. There is no one there who cares about what happens to him or her. In the sense that with any sentient non-human animal, there is someone there who cares about what happens to him or her. Someone there who is self-aware. Maybe not self-aware in the same way you and I are self-aware, but nevertheless self-aware in the morally relevant way. You understand what I'm saying here, Bob?
Yeah. Now, I suppose if one has eyes, then one is sentient, right? Wouldn't that make...
Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but, you know, look, I don't eat clams or oysters, and I haven't for 30, you know, I guess this is my 33rd year as a vegan, and I don't really know. I mean, I don't know exactly whether clams and oysters are sentient. I just don't know. They're bivalves. There's some indication that they are, some indication that they're not. They don't have eyes, but I don't eat them. Same thing with bugs, with insects. I don't know whether they're sentient. I err in favor of not killing them. I don't kill them. I don't walk on grass. If there are creatures in the house, I allow them to just do their thing. And if they're large and hairy and scary, I might, put them outside. But I don't kill them.
Well, and, I'm kind of where you are on all of this, to tell you the truth. So to me, it sounds like you, and I would agree with you saying, if they're sentient, don't use them, don't kill them. But Peter Singer is saying they're sentient, it's okay to kill them?
What he's saying is they're sentient, so you have to give appropriate moral weight, although he's very vague on how that works out. You have to give moral weight to their interests in not suffering and other interests they might have. But if they're merely sentient, then they don't have an interest in continuing to live, and your use of them, if you use them and kill them, you're not doing anything particularly morally wrong, because he maintains they're not self-aware. So if they're not self-aware and they don't have an interest in continuing to live, killing them is not per se a moral problem. The problem is how you treat them. And I think this is an idea that has infected the entire movement. I mean, look, all of the animal groups have bought into this. This is why, Bob, all of these groups, HSUS, PETA, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, this is why all of them,
But I can't quite buy the premise that they don't have an interest in living. You know what?
Well, I mean, look, if you define an interest in living as you have memories of the past and you have beliefs about the future and you have plans and expectations for the future, what Singer does is he defines self-awareness in a very humanocentric way. He defines self-awareness. Now, look.
We need to take a break, so we'll continue on the subject with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio. Thanks to Selectee for its support of the program. That's SELECTTEA.com. That's the website where you can order online, free delivery for mom, and just many categories of tea there: organic, medicinal, flavored, instant, blends, rooibos, black and green, hibiscus, medicinal, all at selectTEA.com. SELECTTEA.com. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione about sentience, and I don't know, it seems like we come to the same conclusion of what sentience might be, but different different opinions of what it means, what we can do. I mean, it seems like you're saying that Peter Singer agrees that sentience is animals have eyes, but they're not. They don't plan. I mean, it's very strange because it seems like his conclusion
They don't have a sense of the few seats. When we look at groups, you know, like we frequently talk about the crazy things that HSUS does or PETA or Mercy for Animals, etc. But there's a method to their madness. I disagree with it totally, but I mean, there's an explanation for what they're doing. And when you and I are busy saying, look, welfareism is speciesist, they're saying, in essence, although they don't articulate it this way, what they're really saying is, oh, no, it's not speciesist at all, because animals don't have the same sorts of interests. Non-human animals don't have the same sorts of interests that human animals have, because human animals have, you know, they plan for the future. They make, you know, they're able to think about the future. They're able to make future
plans. What is building a nest? I mean, I don't know what...
Bob, I agree with you completely, but I don't even think you need that. I mean, I think there are some human beings who have a particular form of amnesia where they are stuck in this eternal present, which is the way I think Singer thinks about most non-human animals, with the exception of non-human great apes and dolphins and elephants. I think he thinks most of them are stuck in this eternal present. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that they are stuck in an eternal present. I don't think that that's true, but let's assume that it is true. Does that mean they're not self-aware? And the answer is no. There are human beings who are stuck in an eternal present, where they don't have a sense of the future and they don't have a sense of the past, but they have a sense of themselves in that second. And they go from second to second to second to second in terms of their consciousness. If they wanted to not be conscious anymore, they would commit suicide, but they don't. They have a sense of themselves in the present, and they wish to get to the next second of consciousness. I think that's true of all sentient beings. I think all sentient beings, even if they are stuck in the eternal present, even if they're stuck in the eternal present, that does not mean they're not self-aware. It just means they're not self-aware in the same way you and I are self-aware. And that may be interesting, and it may be relevant for some reasons, but it's not relevant to whether we eat them or use them for clothing or use them as non-consenting subjects in biomedical experiments or use them as forced organ donors. I mean, it may be relevant if you've got a human being who's an amnesiac and is stuck in the eternal present, in an eternal present. That may be relevant. You may not want to give that person a job teaching history at your local university. but if the question is a different question, is it all right to use that person as a forced organ donor or as a non-consenting subject of a biomedical experiment? The answer is no, because that person is self-aware in a different way from the way that you and I are self-aware. So I think this idea, and that person has an interest in continuing to live, It's just a different sort of interest. That person may not be thinking about what he or she's going to do in 6 months, but what difference does it make? That person is thinking about getting to the next second of consciousness. I think this is key, Bob, and I'll tell you something, I don't think many animal people understand this. It's not that you know, these animal groups are sitting around saying, we want to be speciesist. They're saying that they believe that animals don't have these interests, therefore it's all right to promote happy exploitation because the animals don't care whether we kill and use them. They just care about how they're treated. So if they're treated better, well, that's a step in the right direction. And if we could really minimize pain, then it would be wouldn't be a problem using them at all. Now, that's where you and I obviously disagree. But, I mean, I think this is a really key point, Bob. And I tell you, I saw that at the summit. There were a lot of animal people I met at the summit who really didn't understand this distinction.
Okay. We'll have to continue the discussion on this because I want to continue to explore what we meant by, you know, well, animals do want to move away from pain and toward pleasure and, you know, how that fits in again. But we're out of time. We'll do it next week. Okay, we'll talk to you then. And thanks for listening. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Glad you could be here.